We are pleased to have back this morning in this hour of Focus, Greg Danner from the Audio Video Service Center in Urbana. He's been here on the program before to talk a little bit about audio video maintenance and repair, maybe to do a little troubleshooting, maybe also to talk with us about things that people can do to try to keep their equipment running longer. Also, because in his business, he fixes broken VCRs and cassette players and all manner of audio video equipment. He sees a lot of things. He sees what goes wrong. And some of what we've done on these past programs is just give a little advice on when you're going to buy a particular thing, what you might think about. I know we're not necessarily want to recommend specific brands, only what sort of things maybe you might want to pay attention to if you're choosing between two or three or four different pieces of the same thing and you're trying to figure out, okay, which one of these should I buy? Any and all of this is certainly fine, and I know Greg will do his best to answer your questions. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, anywhere the signal will travel. That's 800-222-9455. Well, welcome back. Glad to have you here.
Very glad to be here. Always enjoy being on your program.
We have already a caller
ready to go. I
see that
there are lights.
So let's do that.
Okay.
We will talk with this person. They're in Eureka. It's line number four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a VCR which I bought new just about 3 years ago, and it worked all right, but I seldom used it, so it's very little used. But it got so that it wouldn't eject the tape, but I did notice that when the power went off, the tape would eject. Now, does he recognize, or is that something that I can take to a serviceman to fix?
One of the things that has happened in recent days, and primarily since you bought that one, I don't know if you remember what you happened to pay for it, but VCRs have gotten so much cheaper these days that I almost consider them to be disposable.
Oh.
If you only need a basic VCR without any particular features, just something you want to plug into a TV and play tapes on, there is no need to spend more than $100 on a VCR. And in fact, I think you can buy one for $50.
Will that both record and playback?
Yeah, these are all machines that will record.
So it might be costly to have your, you know, does that indicate anything when it ejects, when the power goes off?
Well, it would certainly indicate that there's a problem in the machine if that's the only way you can get it to eject. At least you've learned sort of by chance how to get your tape back out so that it's not stuck in there. But for a VCR problem, I mean, these days people don't even bother to clean them. If you need a VCR, just go to the nearest grocery store or Kmart or whatever and pick one up because they are so inexpensive. And parts are generally not available, and most of the people that used to repair them are no longer in business. So VCR repair is quite difficult to find, but new inexpensive VCRs are quite easy to find. And actually, if you're willing to spend $100, you can get a really great machine these days.
Yes.
No need to spend more than $100, though.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I think one thing that we have talked about before on the program is if you get a tape stuck, that you at least should think about the fact that if you're trying to get it out yourself, you may well damage the tape and the machine. So it's probably a good idea if there is some place that you can take it and it's stuck, don't try to pry it out.
Precisely. And, you know, even if you don't really have access to a repair shop or anything, as I was saying, there aren't very many electronic repair shops around anymore. But it has become kind of a do-it-yourself thing, and you may find that you have a friend or a neighbor or somebody at work that tinkers with electronic stuff all the time, and they will have learned how to do this. So if you're not comfortable handling a screwdriver and so forth, I wouldn't tear into one and start prying a tape out. As the woman that was on the phone said, though, she found that her tape would come out if she just pulled the plug for a while and then plugged it back in, which is a good thing to try with any VCR that's acting up, because it's turning the switches on and off and pressing the buttons on the VCR don't really do much to completely reset the electronics and the mechanical stuff inside the VCR. What you need to do is go behind it, pull the cord out of the wall, the power cord, you know, leave it unplugged for maybe 20, 30 seconds and then plug it back in. And that does what we call a reset. It's sort of like rebooting your computer. Mm-hmm. And that may restore everything to working. You may get the tape back out. You know, you may find that after you've done that reset operation that there's really no problem at all.
Oftentimes on electronic devices, they say something to the effect of, if you don't know what you're doing, don't mess around with this. And I think that's because there are some things that do in them hold charges.
Well, this is particularly true of things that have higher voltages in them, which for the consumer would be a TV set or a computer monitor. Because basically that thing you look at, that big glass tube with the picture on it, is actually a vacuum tube. It's one bit of like 80-year-old technology that's still in very big use today. And because of that, it runs on some pretty high voltages, as high as 20 or 30,000 volts in certain places. There are many places on the circuit board where there may be several hundred up to 1,000 volts, any of which could shock you or even kill you if you touched it while the unit was running. So I do not recommend that anybody that hasn't had some technical training and background to fiddle around with TV sets or computer monitors. On the other hand, if you're talking about a VCR or a stereo or the computer itself, not the monitor part, once you've unplugged that cord from the wall, there's really nothing inside that would be dangerous. On the other hand, if you still don't know what you're doing, you could go in there and break a lot more of it than is already broken. Again, there just seem to be a tremendous amount of people around that maybe used to be involved in the electronic repair business. They've gone on to other careers. Yet they're still pretty knowledgeable about this, and they all sort of work on stuff in their garage or in their basement. So for anybody that has equipment that they want to have fixed these days, the best thing to do is to ask all your friends and coworkers if they know of anybody that tinkers with electronic equipment, because it's likely to be a very sort of unofficial thing. Somewhere between 80 and 90% of the businesses that were in the consumer electronic repair business have closed their doors in the last 5 years, mostly due to the extreme low cost of new electronic equipment. There are so many things you can buy new for $20, $30, $40, $50, maybe $100, and that's in every case less than it would cost to even do a minor repair on an older unit. Mm-hmm. And so it is, unfortunately, for people that used to do what I did, in a lot of cases it's much cheaper to replace than it is to repair.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Greg Danner from the Audio Video Service Center in Urbana, and we're doing one of these shows. He's been with us before to talk about basically the same topic, that is maintenance repair of audio video equipment. If you're having a problem, maybe we can advise you, and of course other questions welcome. And the lines are full, so we'll get right back
Let's take some more calls
here, and the first person in line, they are in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Another VCR question.
Okay.
I have a Panasonic VCR that's a couple years old. It was working fine until a few months ago when I got a basic cable package. And now it will not let me record anything in a channel above 13, so the cable is kind of shot. I cannot get it to record. If I preset it, program it while I'm gone, it does nothing.
This is mainly a programming issue, and I don't know if you still have the little booklets that came with it, but these newer machines, if it's 3 years old, all of your programming is going to be done with the remote control,
right.
And when you press certain buttons on that, there's probably one called menu.
Right.
That will bring up a display on the TV screen, and then you can go into various submenus, and you'll be looking for one that's called something like Tuner Setup.
Right.
And then you'll be looking for something called Band, B-A-N-D.
I haven't found that.
And underneath that, you will see two selections, TV, which means regular over-the-air television, like with an antenna. And unfortunately, that's how your machine is set right now. That's why you're only getting 2 through 13 on it. You have to change your machine from TV mode to what they call CATV mode. And the CA, of course, stands for cable. And that is done with one of those menus, and it may be not the first one that comes up. In other words, every one of those on-screen menus has a number or selection you can make, and then you press a button, and it goes into another menu that's like a sub-menu.
Yeah.
But you're looking for the one that lets you set up the tuner in the VCR for cable TV.
Tuner,
Yes, tuner.
Band and tuner.
Band and tuner are the key words, and it may discuss this somewhat. You know, if you have the booklet, it may say something about how to use your VCR with cable.
Yeah, I have gone through the book step by step.
And sometimes it's not the easiest thing to do. Again, it's if you throw up your hands and you just can't make it go, then it's worth calling in a friend or a neighbor or somebody that
is handy
with this sort of thing to find it.
Yeah.
Do you still have the original remote control that came with the VCR?
Yes.
The reason I ask is because a lot of us lose our remotes and we buy these universal remotes that are supposed to run everything. And in many, many cases, the universal remote will be missing the one button you need to do the thing that you want to do programming-wise. But if you got the original remote in the booklet, the information is in there. It may be obscure and hard to find, but it's in there.
Well, I'll try again. Would that also explain why it won't record when I program?
Well, being able to record and do a programmed record is even harder for most people than setting up the tuner, and it does take some practice.
I
don't bother with the books or the manuals. I just go in and start pushing buttons and looking at menus until I find everything, and then I'll go and set it to make a recording that starts 5 minutes from now and goes for 5 minutes, and I'll just sit there and watch it.
Yep, and nothing happens.
And I'll keep playing until I get it to make that five-minute recording. And then, once I've learned how to do that, I'll write down my own little set of instructions.
I'll keep trying.
Because the ones in the book are never very clear. You don't you don't have to give yourself a bad grade for reading because you can't read them. Because they're usually not really done in a way that's very accessible to most people. They might have been written by an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
They might have been written, considering that most of the stuff is made in Asia, by an engineer who had English as a second language.
I think that's the case.
And so they are not necessarily very easy to understand. Although once you've gone through and you've figured out the magic button press, then you'll say, gee, that was easy.
Well, I won't give up yet.
Yeah, keep at it.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. I actually had this sort of a similar experience. At Christmas time, I bought a new television for my mother, who lives in the Chicago area but does not have cable. So I bought the TV, I bought an antenna, I got it all set up, and I turned it on. And I started pushing buttons, and it would only tune in one channel.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't figure out what was wrong with it until, of course, I looked at the directions and realized that for a television that was not hooked up to the cable, it had to somehow tune itself to figure out where the channels were. And when I pushed the right buttons, it figured out where the channels were, and suddenly it was tuning in all these channels.
Very common problem, and this applies to TV sets and to VCRs both. But when you first plug them in, they may only go to channel 2 or channel 3 or maybe nothing at all, and you hit the channel up and down button and nothing
happens.
So you have to look for a mode that's usually called auto program. Or, as I was mentioning to the person with the VCR, it'll be called VCR setup, tuner setup, or band setup. These are all kind of keywords that show up on the menus. And then you find finally a button you press that's called auto program. And then it will sit there maybe for as much as 2 to 5 minutes and seem like it's not doing anything. But what's actually happening is it's scanning through every possible channel out of something like 127 different channels and figuring out which ones actually carry a signal.
Mm-hmm.
I should add, too, that using modern equipment with an antenna sometimes leads to problems because sometimes your antenna doesn't pick up that strong of a signal. If it's a little bit snowy or something like that, the auto programming may decide that that isn't a real channel and skip over it. And so if you do the auto programming, especially if you're using an antenna only, and find out that some of the channels you think you should get aren't tuned, then you have to go back into the programming menu and find something called manual channel set or manual channel add and erase. And that will enable you to type in a number, like let's say you want to get channel 27 and it's kind of weak and it skips over it. Well, you can put in channel 27 and then put memorize working through these menus, and then it will appear when you press your channel up and down button, even if it comes in weakly. This isn't usually an issue if you actually have cable, because the cable TV system puts out a nice strong signal on every channel, but If you have a TV or a VCR and you're trying to use it with an antenna or with rabbit ears or something, then you may have to go into the manual channel set in order to make sure that you have all the local channels. If you're in the Champaign or Urbana area, you should be able to get 3, 12, 15, 17, and 27, even with an indoor antenna to some degree. I mean, you may not get a perfect picture, but you should be able to see something on the screen.
Yeah. We go on here. Let's go Eureka again, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. Two
yes.
more questions, please. What is your view about satellite delivered programming versus regular cable? And do you think there have been enough advances? And it's my understanding that in most places you can't get your local channels with the satellite-generated programming.
Quite true, and that's not so much a technical issue as a marketing issue, in that the local channels that carry the networks want you to see their local advertising.
Uh-huh.
And so if you're picking up, say, you know, NBC or CBS or something from their main network feed, then you don't get any of your local ads. And so the channel, the deals that the networks make with the satellite people require them to block out those networks if there's any chance of that location being able to receive the signal over the air.
Uh-huh.
It means in most cases, if you want to use, you know, Dish Network or DirecTV or something like that, you will have to find some other way to pick up your local stations. And that will mean either a small antenna or subscribing to your local basic cable service.
On Dish TV and Direct Network, is there a problem recording some of those with a VCR?
Not that I know of.
I see. Second question would be, there is something that I have seen. I'm blocking on the name of it, but I think it essentially records the TV programming with memory, computer memory?
Like a computer hard drive.
Philips has a new device, and I can't quite remember the trade name either, but I've seen it advertised lately. And it's sort of a little set-top box, and it's supposed to be very easy to use compared to a VCR, and of course the quality is higher. It does work in conjunction with a small dish type of satellite TV pickup thing.
Uh-huh.
In other words, I don't think it can completely replace a VCR for, say, recording your local channels or something.
It's got, what, 30 to 40 hours of memory in it?
Yeah, because it stores a compressed version of the video, much as what's found on a DVD.
Uh-huh.
So they can fit an enormous amount of storage into a small space.
I see.
And supposedly the quality is supposed to be higher than a regular videotape. On the other hand, I think you're only allowed maybe to download and view something one time or for a limited period. So it's sort of a pay-per-view type device.
You have to pay a one-time fee, too, don't you?
I think so, yes.
The royalties. Thank you.
All right, thank you. It seems, at least sometime in the near future and for the foreseeable future, what we're headed for is a time when now we have these VCRs, or had VCRs, that perform two functions. You could go out and you rent a movie and you could watch it, or you could record stuff
right.
off TV.
And there's a gradual migration happening there. Of course, we can still go and we can rent the latest movies on videotape and play them. But if you go to any video rental store, you'll see they have, at the same time, a huge number of DVDs for rent, too. And if you've ever seen a DVD player or used one, you'll notice that the picture does, in fact, look better than a regular VCR. The disadvantage of DVD, of course, is that you can't record on it. So the only thing you can do with a DVD player is rent or buy a movie that's already recorded and then watch it. It's a lot like the CD is for audio. Mm-hmm. Although people that are audiophiles, a lot of them have gotten CD recorders lately. These have been around for a number of years that people could put in their computers, but now you can buy a deck that has two slots in it, one for the CD you're playing and one for the CD you're recording. And they make it very, very easy to make your own CDs. These are becoming real, real popular because of the obvious high quality and ease of use. And the only thing keeping us, I think, from having recordable DVDs is this whole copyright royalty issue of the people that own the media wanting to keep their fingers on the pocketbook as far as, you know, not letting us individual consumers develop our own libraries of software.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere down the road in the next couple of years, I'm sure that we will see recordable home DVDs.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to line number 2. This is a caller in Champaign. Hello.
Hi, we have a Harman Kardon receiver that's probably 18 or so years old, and it was a very nice receiver at the time we purchased it. And we're getting sort of like static or fuzzy stuff through anything we play, and we've tried switching wires and speakers with a set that we know is good. So
It probably is an interior problem inside that receiver, and you would need to get it repaired. Now, the trick with older audio equipment is finding somebody who can repair it. As I mentioned earlier in the program, there just aren't as many electronic repair shops around as there used to be. I used to be in this business full-time. Now I've reduced my shop repairing stuff down to Saturday mornings only. And so I'm pretty limited in what I can do personally anymore. I have a different full-time job during the week these days, and that was sort of an economic necessity. I've always enjoyed the kind of equipment you have, and I've always enjoyed working on it, but part of the problem is that if it only breaks once every 18 years, there isn't enough of volume of business to keep a person that does this kind of work, you know, basically eating. Because what I used to do 10 years ago was a lot of VCR repair and a little bit of hi-fi. And gradually, of course, people stopped having VCRs repaired, and then they stopped having TVs repaired and so forth and so on, to where the only thing people have repaired anymore is equipment like yours, and that's just a very low-volume type of thing.
Is it worth repairing?
Yes, it is, because you really can't buy anything when you're talking about a receiver or an amplifier of good quality in a stereo system. Literally, the odds are if you can find somebody that can repair it, then it'll run for another 10 or 15 years.
Okay.
And to replace it with something of equal quality, you might still be spending several hundred dollars. In other words, if you've got a Harman Kardon or an NAD or a Nakamichi or a Yamaha, the stuff that you can buy at the local discount store for $89.95 is not going to have the same performance. You're going to have to spend several hundred dollars and go to kind of a specialty, higher-end audio-type store to find something of equal quality, because that older stuff was built very well. Oh. And I'm specifically talking about stereo equipment.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And we'll go next to line number three. This is another Champagne person. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question about discs for CD burners.
Okay.
Is there a downside to the 80-minute ones? And if not, why do they continue to manufacture the 74s?
I think it's a matter of which manufacturer is making them and all sorts of little details. I don't think there's a huge difference, although it may depend on your particular machine. And there's a difference between having a standalone CD recorder, like, for example, one of the Philips units that I was describing, where there's two trays, one to play, one to record, and it works all by itself, and using a CD burner that's part of a computer. They work a little differently.
I have the standalone type, and it only has one tray.
Okay.
Just for recording.
But you can play or record.
Yes.
And have you experimented with the two different types of discs
yourself?
Yeah,
I have.
And did you find any differences?
Well, it might be a question of brands. No, I guess I haven't. I have two discs that I burned, one's a 74 and one's an 80. And both of them, apparently the laser didn't make the little holes deep enough. And it skips, and, you know.
Okay. When you have trouble playing these discs, are you playing them in the same machine, or are you playing them in a different CD player?
I tried both ways.
Okay. You know, some of this, of course, could indicate a problem with the recording machine itself, but you should be aware that any recordable CD has a little bit less output signal than one that's factory made. And so occasionally a recordable CD won't play maybe in a really old play-only CD player. And different brands do vary. And so, you know, one manufacturer's disc might work better than another one. Unfortunately, of course, the only way to find out is to try to record on it.
Stick to the name brand, I suppose.
I think that's a good idea.
Maxwell.
And, you know, once you find one that works particularly well in your machine where you're just about assured that it will always work without skipping, I would lay in a supply of that brand.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, a little bit past the midpoint here. We're talking with Greg Danner from the Audio Video Service Center in Urbana, and we're taking questions about audio video equipment and some of the problems that can come up and what you might do about them. All you have to do is give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next caller is Urbana, and this is line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. For the woman with the VCR that won't record, we've had two different VCRs in our VCR history, and both of them you had to turn them off after you set the timer.
That is a very typical thing to actually get into the timer mode. Some very old machines had a specific switch called timer record, and after you'd done all the programming steps, you would press that button. But you won't find any such button on a lot of current machines. You look at the front of the VCR or even at the remote, and they don't have all that many buttons. And so that is normally the last step that you do in setting up a timer recording, is to turn the machine off. And then you may see a little clock face appear in the window where the channel usually shows up, and that indicates that it's, you know, primed and ready to go to make a timer recording.
It seems really counterintuitive to me.
It does. I'm not sure why it's done that way either, except there was a real movement a few years back to get rid of most of the buttons on the front face of the VCR. And if you've ever used a digital watch or something like that, or a laptop computer, you know, each button has five different functions depending on which combination of keys you press first and how long you hold them down. And unfortunately, that has happened to VCRs, so it's hard to learn how to do it, and if you don't do it often enough, you might keep forgetting. They unfortunately haven't made them with what I would call really, really good human engineering for a long, long time. There were some 80s machines made that, you know, the play button was twice as big and had a big arrow on it, and they actually tried to make them easy to use for a while, but that seems to be history, sad to say.
Well, actually, our 80s or 70s, whenever it was we bought our first one, didn't have a special button for...
Yes, even some of the old ones didn't. There were only a few. I remember machines made by RCA, though, seemed to be easier for people to use than a lot of other brands.
But our newer one, which is a Panasonic, has an on-screen menu, and it says, after you finish doing the programming, it says, turn the timer off.
Okay, so it
turn,
at least...
Turn the VCR off next.
Yeah. At least tells you what to do next. Yeah,
right.
That's a good thing about on-screen menus. If those are well done, it will really help guide you through all the steps. Again, my recommendation always for anybody wanting to make a timer recording, though, is to make a practice recording first. Go through the whole procedure and set it to record something starting 5 minutes from now and going for 5 minutes, and then just sit in front of the machine and make sure that it does that. And then when you're recording that important game or program, you know, later on tonight where you're going to be out, you know, shopping or something and you don't want to miss the program, you'll have a pretty good chance of getting it recorded.
Mm-hmm.
But so many times somebody will be in a rush to set the machine and, you know, they'll think they have it programmed, and then they'll come back after whatever they were out for and find out that nothing happened or the wrong show got recorded. So it's a little bit tricky, and it takes a little bit of practice to get it just right. But once you've gone through it a half a dozen times, you'll wind up being really, really comfortable with recording things from the timer.
Well, the other thing that lasts me up initially was remembering that what I see on the screen may be what's coming directly to the TV and not what's going through the VCR.
Precisely. You can watch, as they say with, you know, the literature, you can watch a different channel than the one that's being recorded.
So I have to remind myself to look and see what the VCR is set for and
right.
What it's controlling.
And in fact, once the VCR has gone into its timer recording mode where the tape is actually running through it and it's recording the show off the air, in many cases, that locks out most of the buttons, either from the front panel or from the remote, until the end of the timer recording time. And so you can't really take over and manually start and stop it once the timer recording has already started. And that varies from machine to machine.
Well, you can override it, but you have to know what series.
Yeah, again, that's right. Otherwise, you might just stop the recording and, you know, wind up missing part of the show that you're trying to record.
Now, my question is, we have a Bose Wave Radio CD player, and in reorganizing our other units, we moved a tape deck up with the radio and and then attached it. We were trying to play a tape, and we had to really up the volume on the wave radio to get sound coming out from the tape. And I'm wondering whether we just need to clean connections, because it's an old tape deck, or whether I need to call Bose up and say, something's wrong with this wave radio connection here.
Well, attaching a tape deck sometimes is a little bit tricky with any stereo, because since most tape decks can both record and play, if you look at the back, there's actually four individual sockets for attaching up the wires that carry the sound. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a left and a right for playing a tape, but there's also a left and a right for recording a tape. And then you look at the back of your wave radio or a typical stereo receiver, and it'll also have two sets of sockets. You know, again, one might be marked record, the other might be marked play. If everything carries those remarks, it's real simple. You go record to record and play to play. It gets more complicated if the jacks are marked something like input and output, because then you don't match them up one-to-one. Inputs don't go to inputs. Inputs go to outputs. Oh. So it gets a little confusing. So you might have to check the wiring connection. Again, you want the tape's play outputs to go to the recorder inputs or play inputs on the Bose.
Okay. Thanks.
And does the Bose have a little button you push called tape?
I can't remember, because
it probably, or maybe it says aux, because it probably just maybe has inputs for some. See, there's less connections on a unit like that that's sort of designed to be compact and easy to use.
Actually, my husband set it up, and I let him do it, because usually he doesn't do these things. Usually I have to do it, and I thought, if he was willing to do it this time, I would let him and not interfere.
Yeah. Well, that was worth a try, but, you know, you are, I take it, getting some sound when you go to play a cassette.
Yeah.
It's just not very loud. Yeah. Now, some cassette decks have what's called an output level control. That can be turned up or down. It's a small knob, usually, and not every deck has it, but it may be there. And so you might have to turn that up almost all the way.
Okay.
You know, finally, if it's an old tape deck, I mean, they are known to fail when they're in storage. So maybe it is dirty. Maybe it does need some repair.
Okay. Thanks a bunch.
All right. Thank you. Champagne is next. Line two. Hello.
Yes. I like to work on old vacuum tube guitar amplifiers and things that I come across. And I have a lot of fun with it and find that they sound a lot better. But my problem is trying to find vacuum tubes. I mean, I know you can buy them new, but they're very expensive, and I figure there's just got to be a vacuum tubes around.
Do you have any access to the internet?
Yeah.
www.triodeelectronics.com.
Okay, Triode Electronics.
Yeah, that's all one word. This is an Australian guy in Chicago that has a store. He imports tubes from all over the world.
Uh-huh.
And he generally has the reputation as being the best and least expensive place to buy brand new current production tubes.
Okay.
Which need not cost that much. If you work with guitar amps, you've probably heard of a tube called the 6L6.
Uh-huh.
I think his price on them is $8 or $9 each.
Uh-huh.
For brand new ones of
right.
good quality, generally ones made in Russia.
Okay.
But www.triodeelectronics.com, that's a good starting point. There are about a dozen other people on the internet that deal almost totally in vacuum tubes, both for antique hi-fi equipment and for guitar players.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly enough, most of the market for vacuum tubes is with guitar players.
Yeah.
You know, they use them up. I mean, if you're out there playing and you're moving your amp around, you're going to wear out some tubes.
Yeah.
And so about 80% of the tubes that are made today are for guitar amps.
Yeah. Well, like you were saying with the televisions, the old technology with the vacuum tube, but, I mean, it's still useful and sure sounds good.
Yeah, well, today some of the most expensive stereo equipment, and generally, you know, considered by the so-called golden-eared people to be the best sounding, all uses tubes.
Yeah.
But guitar players never ever stopped using tubes. I mean, they've just always realized that there was something about the technology that had a musical impact that they couldn't get from any other medium.
Right.
All the guitar players I know have always used tubes, and they've just really never, ever gotten away from it.
Yeah.
With hi-fi equipment, almost everybody threw all their tube stuff away back in the 70s, and then it started to come back a little bit in the 80s, and it came back a lot more in the 90s.
Yeah.
To where, again, if you look at the most expensive, esoteric, you know, audiophile grade type, you know, $1,000 hi-fi pieces, they use tubes.
Okay. Well, I'll check out that website. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, Triode Electronics is a great source. Excellent website, too. It's not only a place where you can order them, but it's chock full of other information.
Great.
Thanks.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. So nowadays, you want quality vacuum tubes, you go to Russia?
Well, the Russians kept making them all along because I think the fighter planes, like even up to the MiG-21, the radar units and certain flight control things and power supplies were always designed with vacuum tubes because there was a problem at one point where a detonation of a nearby nuclear explosive would damage transistorized equipment. Yeah, it was called magnetic pulse.
Yeah.
And the Russians were quick to discover that it literally had no more than a very transient effect on tube-type electronics. So they never had to worry with EMP problems as long as they used tubes. And they were known also for making real powerful engines. Like if you look at their space rockets, they can lift heavier loads than we can. So the extra weight of something with tubes, that didn't bother them very much. So they kept making them all along, and they still do to this day. And after the Iron Curtain came down and a lot of those companies were privatized and lost their Soviet government military support, they were looking for something to do, and they discovered all these, you know, English and American guitar players that wanted tubes for their old Fender and Marshall amps. And they just immediately started making them. And there are two or three different companies in Russia, and they make a ton of tubes. And generally speaking, some of what they're making is considered to be better in quality than anything that was ever made before.
Yeah. Got about 10 minutes left here with Greg Danner from the Audio Video Service Center in Urbana. We got a couple people holding on, ready to go. We'll just keep right on it. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next up is Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Good show, thank you. I'm interested in doing some analog recording onto a CDRW unit that's in a PC. So I want to take some old albums and run it through some kind of a transient search software and then burn them onto a CD.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a hard time finding anybody who knows very much about this.
The most important thing to have in your computer if you want to use the inside the computer CD burner to do audio stuff is a good way to get that audio signal into the digital format in the first place. That means the sound card in your computer needs to be a really good quality one from the point of view of audio. I know there was a website, and I think it was called PCAV Tech.
Okay.
The guy tested like 24 different sound cards and has them all ranked as far as their audio quality.
Okay.
I know personally I find sound cards made by the Turtle Beach Company. And even some of the older ones, I have one called the Tahiti, which is not a PCI card. It's a standard 16-bit ISA card, fairly large. These things were quite expensive 10 years ago, but you can buy them on eBay for maybe $15.
Uh-huh.
But that Turtle Beach Tahiti has like a 98 decibel signal-to-noise ratio and very low distortion. But see, when you plug in your stereo, you know, you're going to run your turntable through your stereo receiver and take a line output into the computer's line input.
Well, I didn't know actually whether I needed to amplify that before it went into
See, a turntable puts out a very low signal. You must use what's called a phono preamp, and that okay. will be found in an older stereo receiver or preamp, okay. and that builds it up to what we call a line-level signal, and it also equalizes it properly. So okay. you have to have the phono preamp. Again, if you have an older stereo receiver that specifically has an input marked phono,
uh-huh.
you plug the turntable into that, and then you will have other inputs called tape recorder output,
right.
line output, that you will run to the line input on
okay.
the sound card.
Okay.
But like I said, you need a good sound card. The cheap sound cards that most computers are shipped with are really noisy. I mean, they're like telephone quality.
Mm-hmm.
Got a Turtle Beach Tahiti, or they made another one called the Pinnacle that was even better. But look, search on the internet for other people doing your kind of thing. There are some news groups.
Okay.
There's some, you know, computers, I think, dot sound card. There's rec.audio news groups. There's a lot of websites for people that do this kind of stuff, and the internet is just a fabulous resource for this kind of information. But more important than what kind of CD burner is in your computer is what kind of sound card is in your computer. Then the last step you were talking about, which is, you know, equalizing and editing and all this kind of stuff. One package that comes to mind that I think is shareware, and you can try out the demo for free, I think it's called something like Cool Edit. But there's a lot of stuff out there, bordering all the way from stuff that's free, you can just download it and use it, up to things that people with actual professional recording studios might use that cost thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I found a good site that had some of the Cool Edit type software.
Yeah, if you try a bunch of those, and it, you know, you have to download this stuff. Some of it's real hard to use. Some of it doesn't really work. It's worth downloading a half a dozen different programs, setting them up, making some test recordings, and finding out, you know, what you wind up being comfortable using.
Right.
I don't know if the hardware you have now, did it come packaged with any kind of recording software at all or not?
No, I don't think so. It's actually an external HP that I just bought 2 months ago.
Okay. Okay, and how does it connect up to the computer, USB port or something?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a fairly good unit, but you're right. It may not come with much software. So
I can't find any,
Again, you have to have a good sound card in the computer because, see, the sound card is going to take in that analog signal audio and turn it into a digital signal. Only the digital signal is sent to the CD recorder. No audio signal ever goes out a USB cord.
Right.
So the audio card, the sound card, and the software working with that is the stuff that you need to concentrate on getting the right pieces put together. Again, Turtle Beach, which is a company that's still around and active, and
yeah,
they make current products.
Right.
They've always had a great reputation, and you can so often find older computer parts and pieces on places like the eBay Internet Auction Service for almost nothing. And I've equipped myself with a lot of these older sound cards that were really high quality. But I love my Turtle Beach Tahiti.
Right, right. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. We'll get one more at least here. Also, Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi, thanks. Okay, I had called in with pretty much the same question as the last person. But I wanted to ask you also about audio cassettes.
Yes.
I want to see if I understand this one more time. Well, actually, I can re-listen to you on the website, but if you don't have the old record player, then is there any hope for you? So audio cassettes and then that.
Okay, well, audio cassettes, again, if you have a cassette player, you could record audio cassettes onto CD-ROMs, assuming that you had the sound card in your computer. In other words, if your computer's set up to make audio recordings, you can use any source that you want. But there, like I was telling the other person, there are a couple of pieces of equipment you need. Now, a cassette tape player you would plug in directly, but if you have records and you have a turntable, you have to attach the turntable to a phono preamp, which, again, is something that every receiver and amplifier used to have.
Okay.
It builds that signal up to the point where it's what we call line level.
Okay.
And a line level audio signal is what your sound card can process and what you can record onto your CD.
Okay, line level.
And so, if you have a turntable around, you probably have a receiver or something that went with it. Now, another thing some people have that's left over from the 70s and 80s is one of these sort of all-in-one stereo units. It looked like a receiver. It had an FM tuning dial on the front and a bunch of knobs.
Right.
But built right into the top of the case was the turntable.
Right.
And then maybe off to the side was a cassette player or even an 8-track player.
Right.
Those units generally have a line output. Okay. Or you can even connect up the speaker output from them directly into your sound card. So if you don't have any stereo equipment and you want to add audio recording capability to your computer, you might want to pick up one of those old-fashioned all-in-one stereos with a turntable on top. Just as a starter thing, you can find them at garage sales for like $5.
Okay. Terrific. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. We're to the point here where... Maybe we got a couple of minutes left. Any sort of thought you'd like to leave folks with?
Well, going through this whole sort of change in the electronic industry that's happened in the last 5 to 10 years that finally led to me having to go into another line of work, and I think I stayed with the electronic repair longer than about 80% of the people that used to do that. And there was a lot of kind of finger-pointing and questioning, oh, this new stuff that's really cheap, it's all garbage, it won't last. You know, these $50 and $100 VCRs, you know, they're broken when you get them out of the box. And in reality, I haven't found that to be the case. The reason this new electronics is less expensive is that it's really being made in some very advanced factory settings, mostly in China, the mainland, a little bit in Taiwan. A little bit in Malaysia, but they have the best factories there. They have a lot of people that really want to have work. There's a high unemployment rate in those countries, and so people, you know, they'll get 100 people applying for every technical job. So they're very motivated to make and sell a quantity of good products over there, and so the prices come down so far. You know, a VCR that you pay $100 for now, the same quality machine would have cost $500 10 years ago. So the new equipment is not necessarily crummy. I wouldn't buy the cheapest thing that you can find on sale, but, you know, let's say the cheapest VCR is $50. For $100, you can buy a really excellent one. The cheapest TV you can find might be $80, but for $200, you can get one that's superb. It's a great time to buy new electronic equipment of any kind. You know, you can get just some amazingly sophisticated equipment and not have to spend a lot of money.
Well, thanks very much for being here.
You're welcome.
Greg Danner from the Audio Video Service Center in Urbana.